And so this morning we're going to look at Rebecca and see what we can discover about her, find out about her. I will tell you that this is really not a lesson about Rebecca as much as it is about that family, I think. Because their story intertwines so much. There's not really like Rebecca on her own. And I mean, you could take out what she did, but the story is intertwined so much that you kind of have to talk about the whole family whenever you have this study over Rebecca. But, you know, we will be looking more at her than the others, I think, or trying to at least. So, we will get down to it. If you would, go to... Genesis chapter 24, verse 1. My goal here this morning is we're going to try to stay just in the passages, and we're not going to flip all over the Bible. We're going to try to gain most of our information just from here. So Genesis chapter 24, verse 1. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all that he had, "Please put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. But you shall go to my country, to my family, and take a wife for my son Isaac." First off, let's just state this and get this out there. I'm really thankful that we no longer take oaths by putting our hand under someone's thigh. That would be incredibly uncomfortable if you were standing, if you had, like, go to court, like, put your hand on someone's thigh to swear under oath. That'd be awful. So, well, I'm just thankful that's no longer a custom that we have. But he did. He did take a servant. And you have to remember, too, that at this point, Abraham had amassed a lot of wealth. He had a lot of goods, a lot of land. He was very successful. God had blessed him tremendously. And so, whenever he went to his servant that was over all that he had, that was a very trustworthy servant that Abraham had. And so he was trusting him with probably what was the most important thing to Abraham. Okay, and that was that his son Isaac find a wife. Remember, times are different at this point. We don't just go to school or go to the local store or shop or marketplace or church or what have you to go to try to find a wife, right? Population densities don't work out that way. They're probably in a pretty remote area. So finding a wife isn't something that's quite as easy to do. But nevertheless, he said, I do want you to find a wife for my son. This is probably the most important task that he could give him, because we're talking about his lineage. Remember all the things that God promised Abraham? Abraham knows what's at stake. Problem is Abraham, at this point, probably thinks, I'm too old to go out and do this. I'm going to send him on the most important task that I could give my servant. And he trusted him with it. And so, verse 10 says, "Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed, for all his master's goods were in his hand." So that's how we know he's in charge of everything. He didn't take all the stuff with him. It's just saying that he was trusted with everything, so we know what kind of man he was. "And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor, and he made his camels kneel down outside the city by a well of water at evening time, the time when women would go out to draw water." So I guess the well is where you go, right? So you don't go to school or church, you go to the well to find women. "Then he said, O Lord God of my master Abraham, please give me a success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, here I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, please let down your pitcher that I may drink, and she says, drink, and I will also give your camels a drink. Let her be the one you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master." So he asks for something really specific, doesn't he? He's like, please make it so that I will know what to do and I will know when I see her. And, you know, part of what we didn't already, what we skipped over for time's sake that we didn't read is the servant was really nervous that he wouldn't come back with somebody. He's really nervous that he wouldn't come back with somebody. And so I think he's asking this prayer, being very specific about it, so that he just doesn't mess up. He's like, "God, please help me do this and do this right. Make this very specific for me so that I can't screw this up." And so he wants something very specific from God to help him know when the woman that is right for Isaac comes. And it happened, before he had finished speaking, that behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her pitcher on her shoulder. Now, the young woman was very beautiful to behold, a virgin. No man had known her. And she went down to the well, filled her pitcher, and came up. And the servant ran to meet her and said, "Please, let me drink a little water from your pitcher." Okay, now think about the prayer that he prayed. This is kind of our first test. Because he said, the right woman, please let it be someone that says, "Here, have this drink, and also the camels too." So he's kind of testing the first half of the litmus test, so to speak, of if this is going to be the woman or not. And she said, "Drink, my lord." Then she quickly let her pitcher down to her hand and gave him a drink. When she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "I will draw water for your camels also, until they have finished drinking." And oh, can you imagine how relieved the servant was at that point? When he's like, "No way. Like, how incredible is this?" Talk about prayer being answered. She just offered to water my camels. Cool. Now, verse 20 says, "Then she quickly emptied her pitcher into the trough, ran back to the well to draw water, and drew for all his camels. And the man, wondering at her, remained silent so as to know whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not." So I guess he was waiting to see if she'd follow through on it. So he knew, like, my prayer's being answered here, but I need to make sure, will she do it? Now, whenever we read the Bible, there's so many things that we miss out on if we don't think deeply about it, or at least we think critically about it, okay? Let's think about the situation. She's carrying a pitcher of water on her shoulder. How big is that pitcher of water? Remember, it's in a clay pot. That clay pot's probably going to have some weight to it. It can only be so big because it's a clay pot, right? It's going to be kind of thick. So how many gallons of water is that clay pot going to hold that she can put on her shoulder? What do you guys think? That was my guess was 3 gallons, right? I think about a 5 gallon bucket. Right, a 5 gallon bucket's very heavy. Especially whenever you consider the amount of distance. Well, the other thing too is this 5 gallon bucket, it's this thick, right? And it's made of plastic. The bucket itself is very light, and you still have, you know, 40 pounds of water or whatever there is in it. So it's very heavy. So probably like 3 gallons of water is on her shoulder. Okay. It also says that she went down to the well. Okay, so wherever they're parked, the well is downhill. All right, and well, you have to draw water up. So we have to let water down, pull, let the bucket down, pull the water up, walk uphill. So we already have, we don't know the distance, but we know that we have a chore here, just logistically. All right, Kenneth. About how many gallons of water will a cow drink in a sitting? 10. Do you know a camel will drink 30? 30 gallons is what a camel will drink. So my assumption is that these camels just came off of a very long journey. They're thirsty. They're ready to be replenished. And so they're probably drinking 30 gallons of water each. How many camels are there? 10. Let's do some math here. How many gallons of water did she truck up from that well to those camels? How many gallons of water? 300. 10 times 30. 300. Think about that, guys. Like, whenever it's like, oh, she went and got water and fed the camel, watered the camels. Like, huh. Cool. No, she trucked up 300 gallons of water on her shoulder, like one pool at a time. Like, I get annoyed whenever, you know, I have to water the trough and sit there and wait for the hose, for the water to come out of the hose. You know, like, oh man, what a drag. I mean, 300 gallons is a lot of water. And so, what do we know about her from this, from this right here? What can you, what can you tell me about Rebecca from this point?
She's a hard worker.
Man, isn't she? She's a hard worker. Does she know this man?
She's probably thinking he's lazy.
Well, maybe, yeah. But she doesn't know the man. And so, I mean, it would seem to me that she's being, I mean, being pretty hospitable, wouldn't you say? It's a pretty good thing to do to somebody. So we know that she's got a strong back, man. She's got a hard work ethic, a good work ethic. She's a strong worker. We also know that, to some extent, she's very hospitable. You know, very, she's thinking of others, good natured in that way. Now, verse 23, after she's finished watering all the camels. Well, start at verse 22. So it was, when the camels had finished drinking, that the man took a golden nose ring weighing half a shekel and two bracelets for her wrists weighing 10 shekels of gold. So he actually paid her for this. After it was all said and done with, he did offer her payment of some sort. Verse 23, and said, whose daughter are you? Tell me, please, is there room in your father's house for us to lodge? So she said to him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, Michael's son, whom she bore to Nahor. Moreover, she said to him, we have both straw and feed enough to and room to lodge. And so, you know, the servant probably understands the genealogies and understands that this is someone that is actually a relative of Abraham. And so you can imagine how excited he is at this point, because all the pieces are falling into place for him. Like, wow, this woman's a really hard worker. She's really hospitable. She has offered to take me and my 10 camels. We are strangers, and she's offered to house us and take us in. And so I think that it's safe to say that by nature, she's hospitable. It's a pretty big thing to do. Now, verse 26. Then the man bowed down his head and worshiped the Lord, and he said, blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his mercy and his truth toward my master. As for me, being on the way, the Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren. So the young woman ran and told her mother, and told her mother's household these things. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban, maybe. And Laban ran out to the man by the well. So it came to pass, when he saw the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrists, and when he heard the words of his sister Rebekah, saying, thus the man spoke to me, that he went to the man, and there he stood by the camels at the well. And he said, come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. Now, at first, I'll just tell you, at first I had this thought for a couple of days that Rebecca was a gold digger. I'm not gonna lie. All right? The reason for that is because I'm just imagining that, you know, Rebecca sees the 10 camels and probably thought these people are wealthy, and she ended up getting paid for it. So maybe she did all this as a money motivator. But I actually think that it's her brother that might be the one that's a money motivator, or that's kind of slick, so to speak, especially based off of what he does later on, where he tricks Jacob into working as basically a slave for like 14 years. He tricks him. We'll find that out later on. But if you notice, he says he saw the payments. He saw the payment that Rebekah had received for her labor. He's like, ah, yes, come, stay with me, right? Yes.
I don't necessarily view him as payment. I view him as gifts on his part, because he's viewing her as, this is the one God has answered his prayer about. Yep. And so it's almost like he's rejoicing and putting this, almost these rings of promise on her.
Mm.
And maybe even a way to kind of show how sincere he is.
Right.
Because he's about to go into their house and tell them all this story of his journey. He's not going to eat yet.
Right.
Until he tells them everything about Abraham and the promise of what he's supposed to fulfill.
Yep.
And what he's prayed and how she fulfilled that. And that that's who he wants her to be, is the wife of Isaac.
Right.
And he says, now either she comes with me or let me go so that my promise is fulfilled. And
right.
So it's almost, I feel like it's almost this kind of promise type.
Show of good faith?
Show of good faith.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. So let's continue reading. So they take them in. Let's see here. Oh, yes, verse 32. Then the man came to the house, and he unloaded the camels and provided straw and feed for the camels and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Food was set before him to eat, but he said, I will not eat until I have told about my errand. And he said, speak on. Now, if you will deal kindly... let me pause there, because I skipped a whole bunch. We're going to go to verse 49 for time's sake. So what ends up happening is he retells this entire story to her family. Says, I've been sent by my master and Abraham, and I have this really important job to do, and I'm basically coming on behalf of God's will here. And I prayed to God, and what I asked for from God was given to me directly, almost verbatim, from Rebekah. And so the servant is explaining that this is something that is from God, so to speak. Now, verse 49, he says to them, now if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. And if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing comes from the Lord. We cannot speak to you either bad or good. Here is Rebekah before you. Take her and go, and let her be your master's son's wife, as the Lord has spoken. So remember that these are the days of arranged marriages, right? So times are a little bit different. This is going to be a very common arrangement where it's arranged that the daughter is given over. Verse 52, and it came to pass when Abraham's servant heard their words that he worshiped the Lord, bowing himself to the Lord. Then the servant brought out jewelry of silver, jewelry of gold, and clothing, and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave precious things to her brother and to her mother. And I kind of wonder if this is almost like a dowry. Do they have a dowry system in this culture? I feel like they did. So I feel like maybe it's possible that the first gift was of good faith, like show of good faith, but this one may have been more of a dowry to her family. Let's see here. Yes, 54. And he and the men who were with him ate and drank and stayed all night. Then they arose in the morning, and he said, send me away to my master. But her brother and her mother said, let the young woman stay with us a few days, at least 10. After that, she may go. And he said to them, do not hinder me, since the Lord has prospered my way. Send me away so that I may go to my master. So they said, we will call the young woman to ask her personally. Then they called Rebekah and said to her, will you go with this man? And she said, I will go. Okay, based off of this interaction, let's pause and talk about Rebekah for a moment. What can we know about Rebekah based off of this?
Well, she wants to do her duty. That's the reason she probably offered him water when he asked, and offered because, dutiful.
Dutiful is a really great word, I think, to describe Rebekah. Yes, dutiful. She always seems to be very attentive to what the needs of others are, what she should be doing. Anything else?
No,
she doesn't delay here either. You know, she was offered by her family to stay with them for 10 days or so and say her goodbyes. And, you know, if you think about it from her perspective, she's getting ready to leave and go somewhere for good. Like, she's not coming back, probably. And she knows that. Like, I'm leaving, I'm not coming back, and probably see my family again, or if I do, it'll be a very long time from now. And, you know, I mean, most people would like to spend a little more time with their family rather than one day you're living your life, and then within the course of 24 hours, all of a sudden you're leaving your family for good and you had no idea this was coming. But she knew this was the will of God. She knew that she had great calling. She knew, and being a dutiful person, she said, I will go. And so she does.
You know, Dustin, they're God-fearing people too, and they keep speaking of it being God's will. So
yeah.
That may have had an influence on it too.
It's true. That's true. Where was it that I saw that? Hold on. Where they said, like, well, if it's the Lord's will, we can't say it's good or bad. Like, it's the Lord's will. You know, like, we can't argue against that, basically, is what they were saying. It is what it is. Now, verse 59. It says, so they sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, Abraham's servant, and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, our sister, may you become the mother of thousands, of 10,000s, and may your descendants possess the gates of those who hate them. Then Rebekah and her maids arose, rode on the camels, and followed the men. So the servant took Rebekah and departed. Okay. So the blessing that her parent that her family gives her as she's departing tells me a little bit more too. What do you think that says about some of the conversations that were had between the servant and her family? What does that say?
God's promise.
So, yes. I think that within the time that the servant was spending with the servants, there's probably a conversation where the servant was talking about the promises that would come out of Abraham's lineage. And what would come from this marriage. And where it was going to go. Right? So, this is letting her know that this is a really big deal. And her family understands that. Her family knows and understands I think they understand the purpose that she would fulfill later on. Now, verse 62. Now, Isaac came from the way of Beer Lahai Roy, for he dwelt in the south. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field in the evening. And he lifted his eyes and looked, and there the camels were coming. Then Rebekah lifted her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from her camel. For she had said to the servant, who is this man walking in the field to meet us? The servant said, it is my master. So she took a veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all the things he had done. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Okay. Anything else that we can discover about her from this interaction? I think we can know that she continued to be dutiful, and she was also respectful. Respectful of him, respectful of the customs. Notice that she veiled herself whenever she went out to meet him. Okay. Now, if we go on to verse 25, we're going to read a little bit from here. It says, this is the genealogy of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as wife. By the way, you know, Abraham must have been getting worried. Like, now we know why Abraham was getting worried. He was 40 years old, you know, and it would seem that it doesn't tell us that he was like, oh man, I wish I had a wife. You know, we don't get it. We don't get that picture where he's pining for a wife. I just think that Abraham was very concerned for good reason. Because Abraham's like, man, I got this promise that I'm supposed to, that God's going to fulfill. And I got this 40-year-old, I don't call him man-child, but he's not married and he should be by now, right? So obviously, we can understand why Abraham was concerned. He was becoming old quick. Okay. 21. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together within her. And she said, "If all is well, why am I like this?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said, "Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger." And so, when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, and he was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. Now let's pause there for a second. Let's not skip over the fact that it says they didn't have children and she was barren. Let's do some math. How long did this go on for? 20 years. It says that Isaac was 60 years old whenever she conceived. 60 years old. So they went 20 years without having a child. This would have been very, can you imagine how discouraging that would have been for them to go 20 years? And it's not like, with medical science today, there's different options and things that you can do. And for them, this is it. You just keep trying. And they tried for 20 years and nothing came of it. But we do see that they prayed about it, which Isaac prayed about it, which was the right thing to do. And then we also know that she prayed about her pregnancy because she was worried about it. So we know that she's going to God, that she goes to God in prayer, and she has faith in God. Now, what is it that God tells her about what's going on in her womb? What's the message that God gives her? Summarize it for me.
Two nations.
Okay. Yep. You're going to have two nations. So he says, "I'm going to give you twins. You're going to have two come out." But what was really unique about it?
The older will serve the younger.
Yeah, the older will serve the younger. That's not the way it's supposed to be. This is not the order of things. And so, I believe Jacob means supplanter. So they actually named Jacob, due to this prophecy about him and what he would end up doing, taking over his brother Esau. Now, do you think that this is me asking you, do you think that Isaac knew about that prophecy or about this prophecy? What do you guys think? Do you think that Isaac would know or not know? I don't have an answer, but I know what I think, but I don't have an answer.
I mean, we don't know for sure, but we do know that later on he has every intention of giving Esau the birthright that's due him.
He does. And so whether or not he knows kind of changes the way we can see that action, right? Now, I think that she probably departed this piece of information to her husband. I think that this would be a... I think that we know that she's a dutiful woman. I think she's dutiful, and I think that she's given us every indication that she's respectful to her husband. And I think that this is something that she would probably, and it's from the Lord, something that she probably would have shared with her husband, which at the time would have been, remember, this is the patriarchal age, where the man is that's the head of the household is also the religious leader. So I think that she would have probably shared this with him. Yes.
Well, the firstborn has a lot of significance too in that time.
Yes.
Firstborn have a lot of significance.
Yes. Yes, they do.
Even in inheritance and everything.
Yes, and we'll talk a little bit more about that here in a little bit, about what the inheritance looked like. Verse 27, so the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents, and Isaac loved Esau, because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Can't you guys see this? Like, can't you imagine, like, what this actually looked like? I feel like it's very relatable today. Well, I mean, still yet today, what we see. Would somebody kind of describe to me what they think this looked like? I mean, it's kind of described to us, but in reality, what does this actually look like? As you might describe it today. Yeah. We definitely have favorites going on here, don't we? Why? Why does it seem that we have favorites here?
They fit the parent's personality. And that's a problem with, as a parent, is that it's easy to connect with one, maybe not another.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, if you think about it, I don't want to speak too broadly, but most men, at least, they want their sons to grow up to be tough, to be hunters, to be self-sufficient, to, you know what I mean, to be like a man's man, so to speak. Most men want that for their sons, just the way it is, okay? So that makes sense. But then on the other hand, what kind of man is Jacob? How would we describe him?
Crafty?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we definitely gonna learn that later on.
Yeah. I mean, he's described here as, yeah, more mild-mannered.
Yeah.
It's less in-your-face about it.
He's soft.
Yeah. 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 All those things. Blaming said mama's boy, which is probably what Isaac was thinking about as a mama's boy. You know, we see that because sometimes we have. You know, the boy will just be content hanging out with mom, working in the kitchen, doing things around the house. And you know, that probably in most cases doesn't please the father very much. And so I would say what we have is kind of a lifetime worth. I mean, we're told, like, in a verse, the way it was. But again, extrapolate this over the course of their life. Think about this over the course of years. This is not just one verse, okay? This is years of the sons growing, sons and parents growing more and more and more attached to one another because they just have more in common, right? We can't discount how powerful that bond probably was between each sibling with each one of their parents.
And how that would destroy their relationship because each child would want the other parent.
Yeah.
So, they didn't have a good relationship themselves because they need both parents' love and affection.
You know, and I'm glad you said that because it kind of makes what happens later on make more sense whenever you see Esau's reaction to what happens with Jacob, with Isaac. It makes a little bit more sense whenever you think of it in terms of maybe. The kid's not getting enough love from opposite parents. So that's a great point. Let's hold on to that idea whenever we read that later on. So verse 29 says, now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary. Therefore his name was called Edom. I think that means red. But Jacob said, sell me your birthright as of this day. And Esau said, look, I am about to die, so what is this birthright to me? Then Jacob said, swear to me as of this day. So he swore of him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils, and he ate and drank and arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. So here's some context to this. If we go back, let me find my notes. It's actually in Deuteronomy, you don't have to go there, I'll just tell you. So Deuteronomy chapter 21, it says, but he shall acknowledge the son of the unloved wife as the firstborn by giving him a double portion of all that he has, for he is the beginning of his strength. So what was supposed to actually happen is, like, let's say you have three children. What you would do is you would divide your inheritance into fourths, okay? So you have three children, but your inheritance goes into fourths, and the first child gets that second portion, okay? So the second child gets, the first child gets two portions of their inheritance, essentially. So what he did, whenever he purchased his birthright, so to speak, got swindled out of it, more like, is he gave him that extra portion, you see? He didn't give him everything. Like, he, see, and that was the thing in Esau's mind. He probably thought, like, I'm not getting hosed here to the point where I'm giving up all of my inheritance. I'm just giving away half of it. And what good will it do me if I'm dead, right? That was his thought. So, let's go to the brothers for a second. What does that tell us about them? What can we learn about them based off of this interaction? You said it. Crafty, crafty, crafty. Right? So, Jacob's a little crafty. Kind of paid off for him to be a dweller of tents, didn't it? In that way.
He again lives up to his name. I mean, supplanter and also taking by the heel. It's the idea of deception.
Yeah.
And that just describes his whole life.
It really does. And we find out later that he pays for it. You know, he does pay for it. This story kind of baffles my mind. I'm like, man, how can this guy be such a deceiver, but really be, you know, one of the three patriarchs of a great nation? Why would God use this guy? But we find that he's repaid for what he does. He God does not let him get off scot-free.
Esau must have been in really bad shape.
Huh?
Esau must have been in really bad shape, though, to give up his inheritance. He must have been really hungry.
Well, you know what? There's been times where I thought I was in really bad shape. And everybody around me thought I was in really bad shape, too. So whenever people start calling you hangry, that's whenever they think you're in bad shape. But I think a bigger part of this, too, is it also said a little bit about Esau. Maybe Esau didn't quite have the fortitude to be a great leader. Because Esau was in a really tough spot. Like, let's give that to him. Let's give it to him that Esau was in a really tough spot in his very family. Hunger, and hunger can change the way we think. But you see, a great leader needs to be able to overcome that. A great leader needs to be able to think through hunger, to be able to make hard decisions and smart decisions through difficult things. And Esau proved in that moment that he couldn't do that, because he gave up half of his inheritance, his birthright, over a very temporary problem. He exaggerated his problem, probably. See, if he was actually going to die, I just have some doubt that he's actually on his deathbed. Most people that are on their literal deathbed from hunger are actually too weak to you know, to request food and to make deals like this. So I think it shows that he may have been a little bit weak-minded. Maybe not set up for it.
Huh? Doesn't come across as very savvy.
He doesn't come across as very savvy.
He's definitely foolish and short-sighted. And
yes.
I mean, that's exactly why it describes him as despising his birthright. I mean, for stew, for something very temporal.
Yep.
He's willing to give up not only that double portion, but the idea of the continuation of the lineage and being the patriarch, and all of that goes along with it. And that's why Hebrews describes it in Hebrews 12, verse 16, that there be no immortal and godless person like Esau who sold his birthright for a single meal.
Mm-hmm.
He's described there as this inequivocal to a moral person because of what he had done.
Right.
And being a kind of a parable to what not to do.
Yes.
Not to do.
Yes.
What does that say about Jacob, though? Who taking advantage of your brother is starving and you want to make a deal.
Yeah.
That's not too good either.
Yeah.
Actually, a really important point, and you had kind of said it in passing earlier, that, I mean, Jacob's not exactly putting on his best face right now. He's not a great dude. He does some shady stuff.
Jacob, I mean, through this, Jacob really never actually puts on his best face. Yeah. Like, that's.
I think it's important to note that all of, up to Jesus, until that point, all of the great leaders were incredibly deeply flawed people.
Mm.
And I think that's a really big part of the point, is that we are deeply flawed people, and God is still going to use us for His good and His purpose.
That's a good point. Yeah, they are all deeply flawed.
And kind of back to Rebecca, this is who Rebecca's nurturing. this is her favorite.
Yeah.
And then we, you're going to get into the part where they deceive Isaac, and you see her as kind of the,
yeah,
the orchestrator.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting how that all ties in.
I know. Let's get there.
It really makes you wonder what her and Laban's parents were up to, because they were both just a bunch of tricksters.
Yeah, I know. And that's why, that is why at first... I've always had a little bit of a, not always, but I've had a somewhat of a jaded view of Rebecca actually in some of this, because I have kind of like looked at spots and been like, what are you up to? Yeah.
I think there's also something to be said for the overarching idea that God's promises are worth more than things of the flesh.
Mm.
And I think that's the real issue with what Esau did. Esau and Jacob both would have been taught about the promises. I mean, they were handed down.
Yeah.
From each generation, they both knew by this point, I'm sure, what the promises were, what their role for those promises were, and Jacob was vying to be the person who received the promise, and Esau was choosing to give up the promise in order for
right.
something more immediate, like food.
It's true.
I think there's also the point that you know, we brought up the prophecy that the older shall serve the younger. So Jacob should have known, especially like if. You know, this was something that was taught to them. Jacob should have known that God was going to give him this blessing. He didn't have to take it. It would have been given to him.
Yeah.
But he,
yeah, I agree with Katie on that. Is
yeah.
that I think what we see in the story goes along also with what Isaac's saying is that they're not only you know, giving it up and Jacob, you know, taking it on his own, but they're almost trying to do God's work for him.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly like exactly like
Abraham
and Sarah did.
Who?
This whole family had that problem.
Oh, yes.
And with Hagar. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another reason. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
Which is also a case in which the older shall serve the younger. Ishmael was Abraham's firstborn son, but Isaac, what his second, is the one from whom the blessing was given.
That's good points. Yeah, we're out of time so soon. We're like halfway there. Okay, so chapter 26, let's touch on this for a second. When Esau, this is, sorry, chapter 26, verse 34. This kind of segues into a different thing, but it's worthy of mentioning because we need to know it for later on. When Esau was 40 years old, he took as wives Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. And they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. Ah, see, we get another portion of Esau that we need to know about. So Esau took on two wives, okay, that were Hittites. I think that if you look at the maps and where they lived, this would have been considered the same as taking on like Canaanite women. It's kind of the equivalent. And if you remember, Abraham did not want Isaac to partake of Canaanite women. That's why the servant was sent back home to the homeland to be able to retrieve a wife from there, not from Canaan. But what do we see Esau do? Esau takes of Canaanite women, basically. And actually, if you look at their names, so in this time, it's really interesting about names is names really reflect what they like what they were into, what was going on around them at their birth, like that, or what they're going to be doing, kind of almost a prophecy of themselves. Like that was really popular back then, and the names of those, I looked at the names of those women, and those names actually had some ties to idolatry and just. What was that? Idolatry and like basically being a prostitute, right? So the women that he married didn't have great backgrounds. And we see here, it says in verse 35, and they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. So he didn't marry women that they approved of, obviously. And this was going to be a real challenge for them. So again, he shows further that he may not be fit to be the leader of the home, the leader of the people moving forward. We have an awkward amount of time left. I think there's maybe enough here left that we can actually split this up and come back to this next Sunday, if that's okay with you guys. Because I don't think that we'll give the rest of this enough study, enough thought if we keep going, because we'll be pressed by time too much. So if you're okay with it, let's just go ahead and pause here and we'll quit a couple minutes early. Do we have any closing thoughts or questions before we part from the study?
No. You got to think, Dustin, that you got to remember that they're probably more like grandparents than parents at their age.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
So they need some tolerance, you know, on part of that, those decision making. You know?
Yeah, you know, it's true. We see that, I mean, Esau got married whenever he was 40. Right, and so it said that how old was Isaac whenever Esau was born?
Was another 20 years later, so
yeah,
he was an old man.
I mean, he was a really old man at this point, because he was 60, so he was 60 at their birth. And it says that he married these two women at the age of 40. Well, that would have put him at the age of 100, right? So Isaac was 100 years old at this point whenever we see the interaction in the tent occur. Or at least 100 years old, because we don't know the distance of time between, you know, the amount of time that traveled between chapter 26 and chapter 27, what happened there, we don't know. So we know that Isaac, though, is at least 100 years old whenever the incident occurs. So yeah, more like grandparents. More, I mean, they're old, you know, elderly.
Decisions are a little tougher when you
know. And our senses aren't quite as good. We'll find out about that. Okay, cool. I don't have anything else for you this morning, but I think we'll go ahead and we'll stop there. Let's go ahead and close in prayer if you guys will pray with me.